be daunt. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we're absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am your host, Kelsey Dara, and this week is going to be such a fun one. I'm so excited to introduce to you my new friend. Listen to this. Listen to these legit stats, okay? He is an award-winning disability awareness consultant, the chief disability officer and co-founder of Bumpin', a sex toy for and by disabled people. Okay, he proudly identifies as disabled and queer, and he is also the host of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories that I will be on later this week. Wow, wow, wow. Which is what a bunch of awards.
I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Andrew, you're here.
Hi, I'm here. Oh my goodness. Amazing. Hello. So happy to be here.
We've been trying to hang out forever, and I was in Toronto not long ago, and we were trying to get together there, but I forgot stupid COVID. I had to go get a COVID test. We couldn't hang out. But we met through Zach Corn Diddy Kornfeld, my bestie.
Yeah, we did.
You were on the tripod talking about disability and pandemic, which was incredible. I mean,
that was
great job.
I am not a famous person, and I was
yes,
so nervous.
Yes, you are.
I was like, what? I was so nervous, and I did it again recently. I was on again.
Yes, how'd it go?
It was great, but I was, again, so nervous because, like, there was Keith and Ned, and I was like, wait, I've watched you in my house, like, in my pajamas. This is really weird. It was great, but it was –
I'm
shy.
You're such a pro. No, you are shy. Are you out of your mind?
Really, though, actually. I'm so shy.
No way. I never would have guessed it. You literally talk for, like, a living, and I guess people assume the same thing about me, but I also am just so non-filtered.
I'm like, I'm super shy. Like when Ned and Keith were there, I was like, oh, what do I do?
Like, aren't they just the biggest dorks?
I was like, you know, all three of them were such huge dorks. And I was like, wow. Okay, I can sit right in here. It's good. We're safe.
Yeah, like truly those guys are the most, even Eugene, who people think is like some like high fashion intellect. They're all just human, dorky people.
They're just dorky human people that like want to do a thing.
Like, isn't that all of us? We all just desperately want to be liked and do something.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, I'm so glad we finally got to do this. I've been wanting to have you on since we spoke. And I mean, let's just get right off the bat. Like, who the fuck are you, Andrew? Like, what do you do and why?
Who the fuck am I? Well, I'm a disability awareness consultant, and I talk in most of my life in everything I do about disability. I'm a wheelchair user. I am super queer.
Hell yeah.
I'm 38.
What's your star sign?
Taurus.
Oh, hard worker. We love to see it.
Hard worker, but also, like, pro procrastinator. Could sit and watch, like, 10 episodes of one show and be like, oh, yeah, I had work to do. Yeah, I just forgot about it. It's fine.
I saw a TikTok yesterday that was, like, life is falling apart. And it's just, like, this girl sitting there. And it's like, my life is falling apart. And then the next shot was her laying down. It was like, has a little laze instead. Like, that's me. Always just trying to have a little lay. I just need a little lay.
Yeah, I mean, I need a big lay too. But.
Okay, well, so listen, you have your podcast, Disability After Dark, which talks all subjects. You tell the confidants just like a couple of the topics you've talked about.
Oh, wow. I mean, we started off as a sex podcast, a sex and disability podcast, because there was nothing out there like that at the time. So I was like, well, let me make one. And then after about a year and a half of talking exclusively about sex, everything from how to have sex in your wheelchair to, like, how to have anal sex as a disabled person, I was like, I'm bored of sex. I want to do more, but I don't want to start a whole podcast. So I just kind of pivoted and was like, well, let me tell stories around disability, because we don't talk about disability enough anyway. So Disability After Dark seems like a great pivot into just telling a story. And so now I've done everything from, like, the importance of disability housing and accessible housing to, like, you know, I'm doing a series on the show right now all about poo called The Shit Is Real, where I talk about, like, gastro issues and disability. So I do a whole bunch of different things in the platform where I get to play with, like, talking about disability and making sure disability is in every part of the discussion.
See, I feel like a kindred spirit with you because I feel like I can talk about shit and have my face and my vagina be like the first things you see on the internet when you Google me. But also the things I'm saying are important, you know?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Like, I've done porn. You can see my dick on the internet if you want to. That's fine. But I have other stuff I want to say.
But like, you really need to hire me to like make the world better. Like, I can't.
Yeah, right?
You should be also listening to me very seriously.
All the time, right? Yeah, so, like, I use my platform as, like, it's my therapy almost, where I get to just talk about what I want to talk about and hope that people like it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what do you feel like with, you know, when you Google you, right, like, a lot of sex stuff comes up the same thing with me. Like, do you, and you even said, you're like, after a year and a half, I got, like, sick of talking about sex stuff. Like,
yeah.
Do you get exhausted with being an advocate and a consultant? And, like, how do you recharge?
I do get exhausted with doing that. And so, like, but I also remember, like, when I was 15, I wanted somebody like me to do what I'm doing. And so I try to remember, like, 15-year-old me needed me now. So I better just keep going. And, like, I'm in a really privileged position where I get to do what I do. And I get to work from home. And I created a job out of, like, thin air for myself, so I better be grateful that I have it and not, like, take it for granted. So, like, yeah, I mean, I do get exhausted, and I think it can be really hard when you're working in the disability space to, you, because it's such an oppressed community that's been so oppressed by everyone, if you don't say exactly what they want you to say and exactly how you're supposed to speak about a certain thing, there can be some, like, infighting, and so that gets exhausting, and, like, So I do get really tired, and how I recharge is, like, a lot of Grey's Anatomy, a lot of, like, just stupid, mindless television that doesn't really, like, and murder shows and murder podcasts. Like, I like all that stuff, so really big on true crime. But, yeah, I mean, I think doing all that stuff is, and being an advocate and putting myself out in the public eye and kind of creating this image of who I'm supposed to be is really hard, and it's not easy, and there are days where I just don't love it, but I'm also really thankful that I get to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I'm recognizing after writing, like, a mental health book and then currently writing a chronic pain book, where I'm like, oh yeah, this is good for me also to just talk about, but when I'm not doing that, like, it's my life and a job. It's like my identity and the way I pay my bills.
Oh yeah,
that's such a cost.
It's so enmeshed, and it's so hard to, like, be, like, how much of yourself is you and how much yourself is, like, the character you're putting out in the world, because, like, you want to have some of you that is not public, and it can be really hard.
Oh, I got a lot of secrets y'all motherfuckers don't know about. I got to keep shit in for me. There's some shit I will go to the grave without putting on the internet,
There's stuff I'll never tell anybody about my life.
Which is crazy, I feel like, to hear from both of us, because it's like we will literally talk about anything.
About literally shit and, like, anything. So, yeah.
I have to ask, like, people always say, you know, like, oh, you gave me, like, the confidence, or, like, you gave me the, you know, gall to talk about something or to, like, step into my own. And I'm like, really? Because I don't always feel like the most confident person, and I still experience a fuck ton of shame. And do you, like, experience that, and how do you work through and about shame and guilt?
Tell me that all the time, too. I get the same kind of, like, wow, you're so confident. You're so, like, your words help me, like, because I'm really active on Instagram. So I'll do a lot of Insta tweets where I'll talk about, like, how my day and all that kind of stuff. And so people will come back with, wow, your stuff is so, like, important to me, and I read your stuff all the time, and it helps me, like, see the world differently, and you're so powerful, and, like, what are you talking about?
Like,
who's this person that you're looking for, because it's not me. And so I feel a lot of shame, and so kind of my superpower, I guess, is, like, leaning into that now and really talking about it and really giving language to it, because I think, especially in the work we do as, like, public facing figures, we want to hide that stuff away, but I'm kind of going the other way, like, let's dive in, let's go right into it and talk about it, but even if it's uncomfy, because, like, people are feeling that way, and if I can shed some light for them to be like, they don't feel alone, I'm gonna do that.
100%. And I feel like there's been this conversation around disability, especially during and after post-pandemic, and sort of like maybe right before the pandemic too, there was this sort of like media awakening of like, wait, oh my gosh, you mean we should be like putting disabled characters into our scripts and having like disabled people actually portray themselves? And like, did you notice that influx? And were you like, good for my bag, annoying for my conscience?
I mean, I think it's tiring because like we've known forever there should be this representation, and disabled people forever have been like, yeah, we're way too late. Like, where the fuck is it? And even when we do it, it's not good enough because we don't have disabled people writing scripts. We don't have disabled people in the behind the camera. We don't have disabled people like actually making the production. So, you know, one of the things that I can talk about it now, finally, one of the things that I got to do this year was consult for the new Queer as Folk coming out by the time we're recording this, like in 2 weeks. And so I got to consult for them over the last couple years, and they sent me the scripts, and I would give them my ideas, and I would say, what about this? What about this? Put disability in this way. And then after I had done that, they phoned me and said, can we have a meeting with you? And I said, sure. So we hopped on a Zoom, and they were like, we want to have you in the show. Do you want to come down and film? And I was like, sure I do. So, you know, to get to be there and to get to be a part of that was kind of really important, because it showed that like you can include disabled people here. They are a vital part of this process. And to know that I helped not only be a part of the show, but also like refine the script so that it was actually accurate to represent disabled people as sexual beings on a big TV show was like really cool. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, congrats. I saw the post and I was like, hell yeah, you were in some like leather getup. It was sexy.
Yeah, whatever they had put me in. And I held on to those photos for like months and months, and I was dying to share. But I was like, no, I can't. I gotta wait. No. And so when I finally got the green light, I was like, yes, I can finally see it now.
I'm going to like put it as the thumbnail for this just so everyone can see all the gorgeousness. Like, we're going to put those photos everywhere we absolutely can. Put it in a museum, babes. That's what I'm here for.
Yes, I'm here for it.
So tell me about like the process when working with like in a space that is very ableist. Well, let's start from, what is ableism? Let's start from the root of the word.
Oh, wow. Let's go right back to the beginning. So ableism is like, it's hard to define because on its face, it is implicit or explicit bias against disabled bodies in favor of able-bodied bodies. So it could be anything from, remember when 45 was president? I know, it was a horrible time. But remember how we all made fun of his body? Like, yeah, that was a little bit ableism there. Remember, like, you know, when people make fun of somebody in a wheelchair for, you know, do you have a license? I know you're trying to be funny, but that's also ableism. Like, you know, or it can be as, like, overt as, oh, you're a wheelchair user? We don't think you're qualified for this job. Sorry. Like, we're not going to hire you. Or, you know, or something like, hey, I want to sleep with you, but you're a wheelchair user, so I'm not sure how to do that. So it's really hard to define because it impacts every part of our lives. But the simple definition is it's bias in favor of able-bodied bodies.
And I like how you said like implicit or not. Like, there is just a level that I think we're born into in society because society is so in favor of abled bodies, like that you have to, I don't know, I hate the word like unlearn it, but you really do just need corrective experiences, I think, if you're not taught it from youth. And so,
yeah.
Or like you just don't have the experience, right? It's not in a curriculum. It's not like taught anywhere. So where do you find that, like, people, do you have any resources or places to point to when you're trying to change like a systemic problem? Like, where do we even fucking start?
I mean, I think before we start, we look at ways to like change right away. I think the first thing we have to do is admit that we're all ableist, myself included. Like, we all can do that. We all have done that. We all will do that. And I think people are afraid to, because nobody wants to be the offensive one. So we're all afraid to be like, oh yeah, I did that. Yeah, I did. But the truth is, like, we all have done. So before we even go to look to like the resources, we should like sit with ourselves for a minute and be like, oh yeah, I'm ableist. I've done ableist things. And I always say, like, doing ableist things doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you have stuff to work on. And I think, you know, I think it's not so much if you make a mistake once, okay, fine. But if you make a mistake and then I ask you to not do it and you continue to do that, that's where I think the problem is. And I think we have to be aware of, like, in 2022, saying I just didn't know is, like, yes, that gets you far to a point. But then at some point it's like, but wait, you're going to hurt somebody. Why would you say that? Like, what you're saying is going to hurt someone.
Oh, shoot. Are you still there?
Yeah, I thought I lost you. It froze.
I thought I lost you.
It froze, and I was like, oh, no.
I heard you say, what did I hear you say? What was the thing you finished on?
I didn't hear the last five words. What did I finish on? I said, you know.
That makes it sound came on something. I'm sorry. You didn't come on anything. You were finishing a sentence.
What did I finish? I probably said, yeah. You know, all of us can be ableists and
just learn to work on. Like digging up old tweets. It's like people from, you know, 2008, it's different from 2022.
I hate that when people do that. And it's like, well, remember when he said this? And it's like, well, but did he grow? Has he changed?
Has he proven himself to be a worthy society member?
And when people do that on Twitter, I'm always like, well, what about your mistakes? Like, what if we went back on and looked at your tweets from 10 years ago? Have you said anything horrible? Like, who knows? Like, I'm sure if we go back on my tweets right now, I've said something horrible, horrible that I would probably wish to erase. Like,
I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm terrified that somebody would pull out my tweets from 10 years ago because I'm sure I said something awful, but, like, I've grown up, as we all do.
Yes. Yes. That's the point there is I think, like, we all have access to learning. And, you know, we've got the world in our hand with the
literally
iPhone or a computer or, like, access to internet. And, like, it's important to do the work and, like, you know, it's not to blow ourselves up, but, like, that's why people like us are here, to help teach you and make you feel a little less shitty along the way. Do you like to punish people ever who are, like, a shitty person who's being ableist? Like, do you ever use the card to just really drill it in?
I used to do that, but then I think that's such a shame because, yeah, it's fun to do that, and, yeah, it's cool to get internet points when you call somebody out on Twitter, and it's really fun to watch them squirm for a second. But then I think, like, wouldn't it be better if I just taught them? If I use my lived experience to teach them? I'm not saying that every disabled person needs to be a teachable moment, but, like, I think if I can do that, if I can be that person for somebody and give them a chance to look at things differently, I'm gonna do that. And rather than being like, yeah, you're a fucking ableist, like, no, okay, like, sure, like, I could do that. And I did that for a while in my activism, and that was fun for a while, but then it felt really kind of gross, and I was like, I'm not giving them anything to feel good about. I'm telling them they're assholes and moving on. And I see it so much on disability Twitter and disability, like, disability spaces, where it's fun to be like, well, you're an ableist, fuck you, and then that's it. And it's like, well, but there's more to it than that.
Case closed. Yeah. There's nothing else you can say after that. Once you've pinned that in the coffin, and I'm terrified, like, right? Like, I'm sure we'll talk about, like, I don't want this interview to be about me. That's why I'm going on your podcast. But I definitely, we've, like, briefly glossed over that when Zach and I were talking about how you were the person that really helped him identify as disabled. And
okay, like, that made me cry. When he told me that, I had to stop and be like, what? Like, I read the email like six times and I was like, oh, and it made me feel, like, so happy because, you know, I do my thing and I'm a goof and whatever. And I don't think that, like, what I'm saying is impactful. And so then when someone like that says to me, oh, and I think I'm discovering a part about myself that I didn't realize before. Like, Zach is someone that we've all watched for years kind of grow into who he is now. And so, like, to see him say to me in an email privately, like, hey, I think you really, like, helped me get to this new place. I still, even thinking about it on the floor, like, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, he'll tell anyone who will listen, and you know, I'm glad he's talking more about it, and I know he's going to do a lot more work on it. But I want to talk about, like, the inter-community struggle, right? Like, is there a hierarchy in the disabled community just in terms of, like, I don't know, who's doing it the best? who's teaching?
Like, I think that the way that I go back to it is there is a hierarchy, and I think the hierarchy is twofold. I think the hierarchy is, who do we look up to? And I find a lot of disabled people, because they're so oppressed and they want somebody to, like, be angry about the oppression with, they'll look to, like, angry creators who are like, yeah, fuck you, you're an ableist. Like, I think, and that's great. Mm. I think if you need to have that part of activism for yourself, good. For me, it's like, I don't want to do that. My job is to build a bridge between non-disabled and disabled folks and be like, I want to teach you without shaming you. I think if we shame somebody, we're not moving the disability rights movement forward if I scream at you and say you're a fucking ableist. Like, that doesn't help anybody. So I think there are different points of activism, and I think there are different points of how you can enter into those worlds. I don't think that a hierarchy is good for anybody. I think we need to get rid of all that. I think there is a disability hierarchy, though. A lot of disabled people will say that certain types of disability, like wheelchair users or people with cerebral palsy like me, are less sought out than somebody with, like, a spinal cord injury or somebody with, like, who can walk and has disabilities. So I think we have to look at the lateral ableism, which is just the ableism within our own group, and figure out how we stop that, because I don't think it's fair.
Yeah, I feel that deep with, like, the chronic pain community, just with, like, spoonies, right? Like, it overlaps heavily into the disability community. You can have one without the other, but a lot of people would argue that you can't, that one is the other. And I always feel a lot of shame and guilt around, am I taking up a space that for someone who, like, and I'm making air quotes, like, looks more disabled or in pain than I am. And
it's so funny. That's literally the conversation. Yeah. That's literally the conversation that Zach and I had. And he was like, dude, I don't think I'm allowed to take up space. And I kept being like, yes, you are. Of course you are. And so, like, but I think, you know, that's, you're not the first person that's asked me that, and you won't be the last. Like, I think the way we have shown that disability can only be through an accident, a tragic, horrible accident, or you have to be in a wheelchair to be really disabled, or you have to be intellectually disabled to be really disabled. Like, all of that is ableism by itself. I think if you have the balls to say, I think I'm disabled, that's a big label to, like, put on yourself. And if you're saying that, there's probably a reason behind it, and we should probably be listening to you.
Oof. Thank you for the confidence boost, for the little reminder. I needed that. I want to go into, like, how you've talked a lot about body betrayal, and I want to know, like,
Did you read my tweets from yesterday?
I don't know. Might I want to know, what do you consider body betrayal, and what is it?
Well, I mean, for me, like, you know, not to get too sexy here, but, like, sometimes because...
Why not? But,
I mean, right? Let's go in. So because I can't masturbate by myself anymore, and because I can't jerk off the way that I want to, sometimes my body will just release. At random points in the day, when I don't ask it to, it'll just decide, oh, yep, we're gonna finish right now, which is really kind of annoying when you're just watching TV. And so that can feel like a betrayal for me, because, like, I didn't ask you to come right now. What's happening? I wasn't aroused. Like, why did you do this? I didn't ask you to, like, have an IBS attack right now. Like, what the hell? I'm trying to do this thing, and I have to be professional. Like, so I think there's a lot of body betrayal because I didn't ask my body to do these things. And so because I am very disabled and I need a lot of help, if something happens and I have to be cleaned up, I have to call somebody, I need support. So, like, all of that body betrayal is also mixed in with, like, guilt and shame and discomfort. And so it feels, the betrayal is like, how can I be seen as normal? I'm doing air quotes. Normal if my body is doing this to me.
Like, I'm glad you make air quotes saying normal, because I feel like what the fuck is normal, right? Like, it's what we see in media, television, right? Like,
yeah.
There is no normal, right? And the shame and guilt is a big thing. Yeah, and I want to ask, like, what you've seen or what kind of advice you give with, like, someone coming to terms with that shame or guilt feeling. And is there a difference between someone who's, like, lived with a disability their whole life versus someone who did have an accident, or, you know, it's later down the line, an illness, whatever, has, you know, caused that in their life?
I think the grief is different. I think I term it as disability grief, because, like, when I lost the ability to self-pleasure and masturbate, like, that took a couple years. Mm. And so slowly you would see your body change. And when I also lost the ability to pee by myself. And so I need assistance with that now. And so, like, those things, while I've always been disabled, those things also happening, like, they took a toll. But I think it's different when you go from being completely able-bodied and quote-unquote healthy to, like, oh, no, I'm a wheelchair user. So I think the grief is different, but I think they're equally as valid.
Confidants, sober girlies, are you looking to cut back or cut out alcohol this year? Come on, join me and Zach on our sober journeys. Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails are the perfect alcohol replacement. We've recreated the cocktails you know and love, like a lime margarita and a grapefruit paloma, so you can enjoy the flavors and feelings of those cocktails without the booze. That's right, zero proof, zero compromise. Listeners can get 15% off the Recess mocktail sampler at takearecess.com/Kelsey. Each can is lightly sparkling mocktail infused with functional ingredients like so many stress balancing adaptogens made with real fruit and only 25 calories or less. It's a guilt-free way to unwind. Whether you're relaxing after work or hanging out with friends, make Recess mocktails your drink between drinks, or like me, your forever mocktail. I am so obsessed with the ginger lime mule and also the grapefruit paloma for spring. It's my favorite go-to weekend drink. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at takearecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences. Right. And do you think that there's a difference in someone who gets to go through those, like, pubescent years and has more experience with the guilt and shame, or is it always there? Like, is it a renewal every time?
I mean, I think for me, like, I'm 38 and I'm way past pubescent, but, like, you know, I still have...
What? You are?
I know. Shocking, right? I still have guilt and shame. And I never dated. I never fucked around when I was a teenager. Like, I never did all the things you do when you're a teenager, because I was busy having surgery and dealing with my disabled body. So, like, sometimes I feel like I'm going through a second adolescence of, like, oh, I get to experience this for the first time. But then there's a shame of that also of, like, I'm 38, I should have this, like, I should be hitting this milestone, and I can't. I should be, you know, moving in with a partner, I should be getting married, I should have, and all these things that I can't achieve. And so I think that, like, it can be really hard to navigate trying to figure out how you feel about these things, because when your disability throws you a curveball, like you can't do something anymore, all of a sudden all those teenage fears of, like, not feeling good enough, not feeling worthy enough, not being cool enough, all that stuff is still there. Like, I'm 38 and I constantly feel that way. So I think that...
Same.
But I think that, like, if you go through puberty as a person born with disabilities, it is different, though. Like, I couldn't imagine being 12 and having an accident and then becoming completely disabled and then needing to do that all over again. I would think I would be mortified if I had to do that. I was lucky enough that I had the privilege of being born in a disabled body, so kind of knew what to expect. But I mean, you're never ready for the ableism that people will throw at you. You're never ready for their ignorance.
Right.
Like, that stuff sometimes comes out of the left field, right. And you're like, oh, wow, I wasn't ready for you to be an ableist today. Wow, okay, cool.
It's always a surprise. And every day is a different adventure. You never know what you're going to get in this fucking society, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I wonder, too, like, if someone who is wanting to learn more about, like, the 101s with whether it be – and, again, we'll maybe cover this on your podcast, but, like, do you consider chronic pain under the umbrella of disability? Or is there a world in which someone with chronic pain can get out of chronic pain and therefore no longer identify as disabled?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, and again, I think if you're using the term disabled to describe yourself, like, there's a reason behind that. You're using that purposefully, hopefully. Like, I think, I think it's really important to listen to the language people use. And I think people with chronic pain are disabled, but I think there are a lot of people with chronic pain who would say, like, I don't think I am. I don't want to be under that label. That label scares me. And I would say, cool, can we interrogate why you're afraid of it? Like, what scares you? And I would say, like, your handbook will be in the mail. We'll see you at the next meeting where all the gimps get together. And I would make a joke about it and, like, let them feel comfortable. But, like, a lot of people are afraid to own that label. And I say, like, it's a community of people that you can draw friendship from, community. And so I think that, especially with COVID doing what it's done, like, according to that stat that was on the Try Guy podcast that I did, it was, like, 1.2 million more people are going to be disabled after this. So, like, we got to start
opening fuckers.
Up. Yeah, basically, like, welcome, fuckers. Like, literally that. Like, here it is. And so, like, I think, you know, I think that, but I think a lot of people are afraid of that label because of all the dangerous things we put on top of that. So, like, we've made disabled mean less than. We've made disabled mean worthless. Mm-hmm. We've made it mean pity. We made it mean all these things that it can be, but doesn't have to be. And so I think if we just look at, and I mean, look at the way we talk about disabled people. We never say disabled. We say, like,
no.
Oh, you're handicapable.
Other bodied.
Or, you have special needs. And it's like, can you just fucking say what it is? I have a disability. Thank you.
Yeah, I've definitely been guilty of using the other bodied. And I'm like, well, I've heard that that's the preference for someone. And it's like, okay, but we've made an overwhelming societal agreement that, like, disability, fat, queer, like, all these words aren't, like, hate words anymore.
Yeah.
If the community has taken them back and is, like, proudly standing by them. And I'm guilty as charged. Fuck. But I wonder, like, speaking of community, now we're throwing another word on top of it, like, we're also queer people. We're queer here. And how does that community differ, do you think, from, if at all, from our standard disability community?
Oh, I mean, I think the queer community, I think the queer community has a ton of problems with their own ableism. I think queer men are the worst because, you know, and like, that's the community that I seek out for, like, sex and hooking up and all that stuff. And, like, they're not great. They have a lot of body shame, and they think if you don't go to the gym 5 times a week and you don't look a certain way. And for me, that's why I started using they-them pronouns, because I was like, I want to move away from, my disability doesn't allow me to be this cookie-cutter idea of what a queer man's supposed to be. My disability is forcing me to do all this different stuff, and I want to just see how my they-ness is connected to all this. So, like, I definitely am aware of my privilege. I'm definitely still read as a cis man. I get that. But part of me is, like, I want to explore what it means to not have to worry about all this stereotype stuff that my body, because I'm disabled and I'm a wheelchair user, my body can't do any of that. And so a lot of my experiences with queer men, like, I've stopped dating. I don't really date anymore because it's a trash fire. What's the point? So, like, I generally work with, like, I work with sex workers when I can, and I get my needs met, and then, you know, I get what I want, what I need, and then I see them again in 2 weeks, and then that's great. Like, it's a lot more.
It's a good setup.
Yeah, it's a lot more freeing because I don't have to worry about, do you like me? Are there emotions? Like, yeah, of course we care about each other, but like, I'm not worried so much about finding a partner. Like, I'm not worried so much about, like, all these things. Of course, I would love somebody to be like, I think you're so attractive, let's go on a date. That'd be great. But those things don't happen because of ableism. And like, I can't tell you the number of times gay men have said to me at clubs or on an app, they'll say like, oh, what happened to you? Are you okay? Oh, I'm so sorry that you're disabled. Like, and it's like, wow, okay. And so like, you get enough of
what
those.
What happened to you? Oh my God.
Yeah. Like, you get enough of that and you're just like, I don't want to date anymore. Like, fuck it. This is ridiculous. So, right. Like,
is there like not enough communities of like queer disabled folks who don't have to deal with that shit? Like, there's just
there's no specific community club.
Like, do we need to get hella niche?
And I think maybe you froze again.
Oh no, are you back?
Yeah, you are.
You're in.
Okay.
So sorry. Did you hear my question? Sorry.
Yeah, ask it again and I'll answer it again.
Yes, thanks. I was like, do we just not have enough spaces for like queer disabled people? Like, is there no, do we not have enough apps or clubs or physical spaces?
We don't,
not
well,
that
we don't have
segregate even more, you know?
No, we want inclusion. Kind of. So what we need to do is to make the queer spaces have a ramp. We need to make queer spaces have elevators. We need to make queer spaces have accessible fucking washrooms. Like, we need to put all that stuff in the existing spaces to be like, we're here too. And one of the things I loved about doing Queer as Folk, and I'll just say what I did because whatever, if I get in trouble, sorry.
Yeah.
But like, so one of the scenes I got to do was I got to be in a sex club scene where I got to like pretend to have sex with somebody on camera. And so one of the cool things about that was that it was, even though it was fake, even though it was TV, they made an accessible club where a bunch of people in wheelchairs could be seen. And so we need to do stuff like that. And so what I'm so proud about that show, and when people see that, is like, gay men, gay able-bodied men are going to see that and go, oh, I didn't realize that was possible. Maybe I should reconsider how I thought about this now. And so I don't think we need to have different clubs for non-disabled people. I think we need to have clubs retrofitted to have ramps, elevators. Like, I say this all the time. We have so many, you know, you live in LA. There's so many clubs there that have big drag parties and do all this stuff. Why couldn't one of those clubs have a fundraiser for a ramp? We have fundraisers for HIV and AIDS all the time, which are great and important and valuable. Mm-hmm. Can we not have the same kind of fundraiser to build a fucking ramp at the club? Why can't we do that?
I mean, like, we've also been doing the AIDS fundraisers for, like, 20 years. It's like, we need another principal blue ribbon cause. Like, let's get some brainstorms going, guys. Like, share the wealth, literally.
Like, I want to see the Try Guys do an episode where they go into a gay club and they do their drag show, but they raise money for, like, a ramp. How fucking awesome would that be?
I'm going to text Rachel, their producer, right now.
Yeah, I'd be like, here's the idea.
And we have this amazing disability consultant that you could hire if you... And you better have a fucking disabled voice and consultant. And yeah, they're very good at that kind of stuff. But for anyone listening.
Yeah, but I mean, like, how cool would that be to have those things in clubs? And I think we just need the awareness. I think the queer community is still, especially queer men, at least the community that I frequent, they're really like, you know, they're afraid of illness and disease because of the AIDS crisis 20 years ago, 20, 30 years ago. It's still scary for them. So that's why they all go to the gym and they all look a certain way and they all are super into fitness because they're afraid of illness. And then I roll up and be like, yo, I'm chronically ill and I'm disabled and I have a big dick and when are we fucking? And they're like, I don't know what to do with you. I'm so afraid of you. Like, what do I do? So I wish that more queer men would sit with their own ableism and be like, oh, I fucked up here. Let me try again.
Wow. Yeah. And I feel like also hilarious. The fear, you're like so right that there's like a fear, but like, what are we so afraid of? Is it like we're afraid of being the wrong ones, being the called out ones, or is it just like stepping to a space that we feel like we don't belong? Like, where does the fucking fear come from?
All of that. We're afraid of all of those things. Like, all of that together. It's not one thing or the other. It's all of that together. And because we don't talk about the fact that, like, everyone is going to be disabled, which is why, you know, when Zach said, I think I'm disabled, it was like a light bulb moment for him, because, you know, he doesn't think about, and why would he? Why would you think about becoming disabled? That's not how we operate. But when we start putting that in our everyday life of like, yeah, if you're lucky enough to live long enough, you will become disabled. You will have illness. Mm-hmm. You will have disability. And so, like, I think the fear comes from, I think particularly if we're talking about queer men, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they watched all their friends die from HIV and AIDS, which is horrible. And so they look at someone like me and they don't know how to process, wait, he's chronically ill, he's disabled, he's happy, and he wants me to fuck him? What do I do? I don't understand this. So I think they're just afraid, and no one's ever said to them, no one's ever said, it's okay to be scared, it's okay to be afraid of this, but let's talk about it. We've been taught that we're not supposed to talk about it, so when I come in and say, let's talk about it, everybody goes, oh, what? I'm allowed to talk about this?
Right. And I think the key word is, like, when it's consensual, right? You know, like, there's so many resources out there. There's so many advocates and people that are wanting to have those teachable moments, that are willing to have the scary, awkward conversations. Like, there's no reason why you can't just, you know, download Disability After Dark and start from the beginning.
I mean, you really should.
And start learning.
It's the best. Yeah. Yeah. And
those,
I think,
early,
you know,
episodes.
Yeah. The first 100 are really great. No, they're all amazing. But you know, to think about, like, that discomfort. And I think what I'm doing now in my activism and advocacy is, like, let me sit with you and let me be uncomfortable. And that's okay. Like, it's all right to be uncomfortable. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. I think where we get into you're a bad person territory is if I've asked you multiple times to stop doing this or explain to you why it's harmful, and then you continue doing it, and you're like, oh, I just didn't know any better. Well, but I told you, though. So I think people's initial feelings of ableism are not, they don't make you bad. They just mean you have stuff to work on. And if you start doing the work, you'll start to see ableism everywhere and start to, like, change the way you behave to make sure that you're not being ableist. That's really all we can do, and do our best to make sure that we're not hurting someone else.
Yeah. And then, like, where does, like, the sex and disability 101 start, right? Because I feel like there's the just societal ableism, and then how do we dig deeper? Like, how do we go further into, like, just beyond the basic level of being an advocate or being an ally?
I mean, I think the sex 101 starts with, like, when you become disabled, you're going to want to have great sex, right? So why aren't we talking about it now? When you, like, I always say, like, you could run into the hottest disabled person in your whole life. You could be at the store and they could be in their wheelchair, like, at the grocery store. You could be at a doctor's office and they could be there. You could, like, even if you don't become disabled yourself, you could meet somebody who you fall in love with who is disabled. And, like, you're going to have to deal with that. So I think the sex 101 is, like, when you become disabled, you're going to want to have sex. Still, too. And when you meet a disabled person, you might want to have sex with them, too. Or they might want to have sex with you. And I think that the thing you should do if you are, you know, if you're wanting to have sex with a disabled person or you're afraid of talking about that, consider why. Why are you afraid of talking about sex and disability? Because you don't want to say the wrong thing, or because you assumed they couldn't have sex, or because you assumed all this stuff. Like, I think before you get into, like, again, the same thing I said before you get into resources of, like, how to change it, you have to look in your own biases first and be like, what have I believed from the beginning? And then once I voice that without shame, because I think that's the problem too. A lot of people will voice their opinion or voice their misunderstanding, and then disability activists will go, well, you're wrong, and fuck you, and it's like, okay, well, that you're not helping there. You're actually making it worse for somebody to learn. So my job, even when it's really hard, is to be like, let me just sit in the room with you, and let's have a talk. Tell me all the things that you think are horrible. And when I give lectures at big universities, I'll say, like, okay, does anybody have any ableist thoughts? Tell me. And they'll all sit there and look, they'll all be quiet, not wanting to offend me. And I'll say, I know what you're thinking, just say it. And I'll get emails 2 or 3 weeks later that are like, I wanted to ask you about your genitals, or I wanted to ask you about, like, this position, or I wanted to ask you, like, how does this work, but I was too afraid. So I would say, like, ask me the stuff that you're afraid of, and we'll talk about it. And I think the way we get to really talking about sex and disability is figuring out, first off, what we're afraid of. And we're afraid of hurting the disabled person. We're afraid of offending them. We're afraid that their body won't look like the bodies we're used to. And you know what? Sometimes they won't, but they're still it's still a human being in there, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I think that that's so important, too, is, like, to do a breakdown of your own fears and your own concerns, because I'd assumed it often has to do with fear of insulting or insinuating or assuming on someone else's behalf, is at least, like, you know, some of the questions I get in my very limited sexual disability experience is, like, I'm like, I'm okay. I'm more, if your dick is in front of my face, we're past the point of, like, being cautious about hurting my feelings. Like,
if your dick is in front of my face, yeah, if your dick's in front of my face, I'm going to town. I'm figuring, I want to do this. I mean, but I think also, like, the fear people have, and especially, you know, for you as a female identified person, I think people are really, they just don't want to say the wrong thing. And, you know, guys are idiots. Guys are really, like, not the smartest people in the world. Believe me, I know I'm red as one. I've slept with many. They're just ridiculous. So I think, like, but I think asking questions beforehand, before their dick's in my face, like, and so I give them a chance to be like, hey, do you want to talk about some stuff? Or I'll say to them before we hook up, like, hey, I'm very disabled. Are you sure you're okay with that? Like, I give them 5 or 6 chances to opt the fuck out, because if they're too scared, then I don't want to deal with you. But, I mean, I think that the fear is also, like, what are people going to think when I say that I slept with a disabled person? What are they going to think of me if I said, yeah, my partner is in a wheelchair? What is society going to think of me if I agree to do this? Because, again, we've made this societal agreement that disability and sex is bad and wrong. So if you break that agreement, what does that say about you? People think, you know, weird about you. So I think there's a lot of stuff in there as to why people are afraid.
That's so, it's so funny. My initial reaction when you said that was like, who would think that? If anything, I wish I'd slept with more wheelchair users. And then I went, wait, is that also a problem? Is that also, like, when do we also get to, like, a kink? Is it the ever harmful thing? Like, are we ever, yeah, the fetishization of it.
Like, I mean, first of all, the fact that you could pronounce fetishization is, like, really, it's so hard to say. It's so hard
it's
to say.
It's not easy when the bottom half of your mouth is numb.
No, yeah, it doesn't work. So, but, you know, I think fetishization, like, I like fetishizing myself a little bit. Like, I'll play with language. I'll call myself a bear in a chair, or I'll call myself, like, a big dick crip, or I'll call myself, like, you know, I'll use certain language to play with the fact that I'm disabled. And I want my partners to do the same. If I'm fucking you, I want you to be okay calling me a dirty little cripple. Or I want you to be okay, like, you know, but I make that choice. That doesn't work for everybody. And I think when you dehumanize the person, if you're dehumanizing them without their consent, that's totally different. But if I said to you, like, I think it's hot when you call me a dirty little cripple or a bear in a chair or whatever it is, like, I think listening to the language disabled people want you to use, both in and out of the bedroom, is important. Giving them the agency to say, yeah, I want you to humiliate me right now as a disabled person. Like, I want, that turns me on. But, like, I think if you did that, I had somebody once, had a sex worker once, who I won't see again. They were very nice, but we didn't click. And he came into my apartment, and he sat down before we started the session, and he goes, oh, you're so handy capable. And I went, wait a minute, hold on. Like, who taught you that? And he goes, oh, I thought that that's language that you guys liked. And I was like, no, we didn't sign off on that.
No.
Collectively, we said no. And then we were halfway through our session. I'd already paid the money. So I was like, well, if I'm gonna, if you're here, so like, I guess I'll work with you, fine. So we're in the middle of it, and he stops me halfway through, and he goes, he whispers in my ear, and I thought he was gonna say something dirty like, oh, you're so hot, do this, like, fuck me harder, whatever it is. And he goes, you're such a good person. And I went, I literally stopped. I pushed him off me, and I went, what'd you say? And he goes, oh, I just said you're a good person. And I was like, you don't know me from anyone. You don't know who I am. Why would you think that I'm a good person? He goes, well, you know, because you're in a wheelchair. And I went, I was like, okay, I'm 20 seconds from coming anyway, just finish and leave. Like, can we be done? Like, it was so...
There are some people that are just a lost cause. You know, you gotta know where to expend your energy.
Yeah. And so, like, I remember, I'll never forget that. I know he meant well, and I know he didn't mean to be rude, and I understand all of that, but I just thought, what are you saying right now? And, like, some people have said... Yeah, like, what a horrible thing, way to start. Like, he could have said anything else, and I would have been like, sure, great.
Anything else.
Yeah, so, it, like, stuff like that. And I think what people don't realize is, like, I have to give you permission to talk, to ask me those things. And if you were going to ask me, if you were going to say, like, I think you're a good person because you're in a wheelchair, I really would have preferred you ask me before I'm, like, you know... deep throating you and trying to get off. Like, I really, like, I, like, God damn it, I just want to have a good time here and you're ruining it.
Andrew, literally, my chronic pain flare is so hot right now because you are making me laugh too fucking much.
I love it so much.
I thank you for it and I applaud you for it. If someone can get me to need an ice pack after a fucking podcast, then you know it's been a good episode. But
I feel so honored that I get to do that.
Yeah, I feel like I just gave the longest blowjob of my life. And I can go for a whole about 3 minutes before I need a break, okay?
Wow, that is some skill. All right.
Wow. Fuck. Okay, Andrew, can you please come back? Because I feel like... Of course, I didn't look at my outline. I knew I wouldn't need any fucking questions. I want to talk to you again. I think you're so great and funny. Will you please come back?
Yes, please. I would love it. So I had so much fun. This is such a free flowing. Like, you'll see when you do mine on Friday. It's a bit more structured, but I love it. This is great. This is awesome.
I need structure. When I'm in my brain and I've had an Adderall, we can go to all sorts of different lands. But when we're on your podcast, I appreciate the structure in the ground. So please,
amazing.
Tell me
okay,
what
I'm ready.
Do. I need that. I'm ready. More of that in my life.
Awesome. Good.
Okay.
Good.
Well, Andrew, where can the Confidants find you and your work, and how do you want to be found?
The Confidants can find me. First of all, you should be downloading Disability After Dark, which comes out every Saturday with new episodes and bonus series and things I'm doing, all that stuff. So download that wherever you podcast right now. And then I'm really active on the Twitter and Instagram, so you can find me at AndrewGurza1, AndrewGurza and the number one after it. And that's it. And then you can find me there. And you can hire me by going to my website, AndrewGurza.com, and I give talks and I give writing tutorials and I help edit things to make sure that disability is in everything. So hire me there.
I was gonna say I'll probably reach out to you off camera, obviously, about like my next book that I'm writing, because I've been like searching for consulting on it, and like here you are.
I think you found the one. I would love to. I would be so honored. It'd be great.
That would be. I will definitely have that conversation. And you'll definitely come back, and we're friends. And thank you so much for doing this episode.
It was so fun. It was really a lot of fun.
Oh, good. All right, Confidants, make sure you follow Andrew. All the links are linked below. Duh. Listen to him and his podcast and follow him on all the socials. And we will see you next week. Bye, Andrew.
Bye.